and you're on the front porch. I'm Scott Finn, Grand Poobah here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. We are joined by Jesse Troy, an economist with the Free Market Cardinal Institute. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Scott.
And Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
Governor Jim Justice's second State of the State. It was full of all sorts of props, as you would expect.
As we've come to expect.
Not one, but two whiteboards, and the entire Greenbrier East girls basketball team, which Jim Justice coaches. To me, what the State of the State is good for is the governor had to decide what's in, what's out. When he started out like saying, okay, now here's what we're going to work on this year, opioids was first.
Well, the first thing we got to do is just this. We have to stop this terrible drug epidemic. We have to. If we don't, it will cannibalize us.
It's the thing that we have to tackle before we can tackle anything else. I think every governor has always talked about this is an issue we have to deal with. He's saying, oh my God, in his very homespun way, this is so serious now. We can't ignore it any longer. We must do more. To that point, he didn't talk about this in the speech, but there's a group of people led by Dr. Gupta from the Bureau of Public Health and some others that have been working on a 12-point plan that would hopefully help West Virginia turn things around. 2018 might be the year that things stop getting worse and start getting better. That would be the first goal. You know, here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, our staff has been talking about this, and we've decided that we want to use our power as a communicator to help change attitudes toward the opioid crisis and actually turn it around. So we're talking with the public, we're talking with these experts, we're talking with people who have struggled with addiction, and we're trying to figure out what are the messages that people need to hear in order to effectively fight this thing, to stop the overdoses and to lead to less addiction happening, getting more people getting treatment. And so I'd like to hear from you guys what you'd recommend. What are the sorts of things that you think that keep us as a state from being able to turn this thing around?
I'm concerned about is there is at least one thing that's really working for people, and that is medically assisted treatment, which has been made possible for an awful lot of people by the Affordable Care Act, especially Medicaid expansion.
Doesn't your daughter work in that field?
She worked in that field, and I've spoken to several other people, including people in recovery from that, who are saying this has given them their life back. They're working, they're productive, they're taking care of their kids.
No, the science says you're right. Medically assisted treatment is effective, and in a lot of cases more effective than just trying to get people to drop it cold turkey. But there's a lot of pushback for medically assisted treatment, too. There's this idea out there that I hear all the time. It's like, oh, you don't want to replace one addiction with another addiction. You're just trading one drug for another. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, if you can approach things from a public health point of view or from a moralistic point of view. I mean, you could say cholera is caused by poor people who don't wash themselves enough and that they should take responsibility for it.
I guess my point is if we don't change that attitude— among some people, then we're not going to have the political will to do medically assisted treatment. The other thing I think is going on there is for the longest time we had methadone clinics in West Virginia, which was sort of an early, the most rudimentary form of medical assisted treatment. The drugs now that are out there are much better, more sophisticated.
It's really rigorous too. They have to go through medical treatment, through group thing. They have to go to like these NA meetings. I mean, it is really hardcore. It's not just going to get a little something to take the edge off.
Well, and I think for a long time, though, the problem is that for a long time, the methadone clinics were unregulated, and some of them really did take advantage of that and did not provide good service. And that was for people's first impression a lot of times in West Virginia of medically assisted treatment. And so I think part of the problem, Rick, is that bad first impression. How do we make sure people don't have an unreasonable bias against finding out about that and using it if necessary? That's one big thing.
Well, I think that the point that you brought up about the medically assisted treatment with the we don't want to be replacing one addiction or dependency with another. And that's all fine and well if we want to believe that, oh, everything would be sunshine and daisies if people just got sober, got their act together, got clean. But the world is messy and the world's a lot more complicated than that. It's patently unrealistic to a certain degree. And so we have to think about what are the best alternatives. If medically assisted treatment gets people back into leading productive lives, contributing to the economy, contributing to their community. That's really great. And other outlets too, different private organizations, charities that are helping people with the, you know, reintegrate into a community outside of what was their prior, probably their prior user community.
Rick is, you know, as a native Appalachian, do you think there's a cultural aspect to this? So I'm Catholic and I come in from the outside. And when I grew up, my parents drank alcohol on Saturday night and went to church on Sunday. And all their friends did too. Whereas I think isn't there a religious aspect that in some evangelical religion and born again sort of religion in West Virginia that says that you should be a teetotaler? If you're Christian, you shouldn't drink. And this idea of, or am I overplaying this?
No, especially I remember that growing up, a lot of people grew up like gave lip service to teetotaling, you know, but then there's this rampant alcoholism. That's the shadow side of it.
You think that might explain some of this idea behind like abstinence only for drug treatment, that sort of cultural thing that says that you shouldn't use it at all, and using these other drugs to treat it is just as bad as being on the drugs? I mean, I kind of wonder if there's sort of a all or nothing attitude toward drugs and alcohol here.
Well, so many things are different now, like the way we literally got bombed with pills by pharmaceutical companies, as Eric Ayer talked about on this program. And I mean, I think we're kind of off the books. We're in kind of new territory with the opioid thing.
Well, here's the last thing I'll say, and I'll let it go. It can improve. There are other states where it is improving right now. It doesn't just get worse forever. You know, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, a lot of those states have adopted this medically assisted treatment and have seen their rates start to go down again. And so these things can get better. And if we have to believe that if we're going to actually effectively fight it. And that's the Front Porch. That was Rick Wilson over here from the American Friends Service Committee and Jesse Troyan with the Free Market Cardinal Institute. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We are launching our Love and Protect Chocolate Challenge, where, you know, for more than 20 years now, we have partnered with Hall's Chocolates in Vienna, West Virginia. Basically, what you can do is you can call 1-800-RADIO-87 or make your pledge at wvpublic.org, and you can send this box of chocolates anywhere in the country and have a message on it of love to someone that you love. Call 800-RADIO-87 or pledge online at wvpublic.org and send your box of Hall's chocolates anywhere in the continental U.S. by Valentine's Day, and protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks.